Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the best hours of your sports week. Welcome to the place where sports opinions collide. This is another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. I am your host, 12 Kyle. We want to thank you for downloading, subscribing, and more importantly, share with your friends. Tell a friend to tell a friend about the best sports podcast out there. This is Dead End Sports. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast. You can find this podcast just about anywhere. We're on all of the social media accounts. We have Facebook account, of course, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, youtube.com/spellitout Dead End Sports. So there's no reason not to subscribe to our podcast. As I mentioned, this is the best hours of your sports week. This is Dead End Sports. Of course, I will not be doing this podcast alone. Tonight, rolling with me are the homies. First up, my man, BZ430. BZ, what up, though?
What's going on, brother Kyle?
Chilling, man. Chilling. What's happening?
Hey, man. Golfing. I'm feeling some golfing soon.
Hey, man. You know what? I think winter's over here in Atlanta.
I think it's technically over, man. I mean, I'm feeling some golfing, man.
I don't see anything less than 65 degrees going forward. We definitely need to make that happen.
Yeah.
And also joining us, man, is the homie Ken. Ken, what's going on, man?
Oh, I'm good, man. Good. Just getting over a cold, but I'm here and I'm ready to work.
No doubt. No doubt. Man, a lot of stuff to talk about on this week's podcast. Man, you could start in probably 10 different areas, but let's start first, man, with the big trade that went down as of this recording just yesterday. Boogie Cousins leaves the Sacramento Kings. He's being traded to the New Orleans Pelicans, joining fellow Kentucky player Anthony Davis. Both Boogie and Anthony Davis will be together in New Orleans side by side. This trade came out of nowhere, really, because we had been told probably since the beginning of the season that the Sacramento Kings were not looking to move Boogie. So let's start right there, man. This is a huge, huge trade coming on the heels of this past weekend's All-Star game. And we actually saw a clip of where Boogie actually was told in front of reporters that he was being traded. Now, if you remember, if you watched the All-Star game, Boogie told the coaches that, you know, he was a little dinged up, so he didn't play that much during the All-Star game. But nonetheless, man, you got arguably two of the best big men in the game right now. So, B, what does this mean to you? Do you think this makes the Pelicans a contender?
Like right now?
Right now.
No, not exactly. I think they still have to, you know, get a couple of pieces here and there. I mean, I'm not saying they need like another superstar, but like if they can, I think they can be onto something if they can find like a type of shooting guard, a small forward, like a KCP from the Pistons, someone that can shoot the three ball pretty good and that can defend, that can perimeter on ball defender really good. If they can get someone like that, or if they already have someone that they can groom into, you know, I don't know how much they paying Drew Holiday. I don't know if they'd be able to afford him, Anthony Davis, and DeMarcus Cousins. But, you know, I think this is a good stepping stone towards the right direction. You know, we always question New Orleans front office, you know, making some decisions, and they definitely got over on this trade and getting a franchise player like DeMarcus Cousins. So, I think I tweeted earlier today, they pretty much have 1A and 1B of the big fellas, two best guys that play two different positions at power forward and center. You know, there's always been those arguments and debates who was the best big man between DeMarcus and Anthony Davis, and now you have these guys, you know, on the same team entering their prime of their careers. You know, granted, Anthony Davis can finally stay healthy at a consistent basis. You know, yeah, I think that you set for the next 12, 13 years at that power forward and center. Now, at this point, it's all about getting a really good pass first point guard and, you know, some small forward shooting guards that can shoot the ball very well and that can defend. You know, you don't want no shooting guards that's not a good on-ball defender. Having some wing guys that are good on-ball defenders is definitely important for New Orleans Pelicans going on out. Like I said, whether if it's someone in the draft, someone they can pick up in free agency, or someone they can groom into that, you know. So I know they got Solomon Hill, and I forgot who's a shooting guard. Moore, I can't pronounce his first name, but I think his last name is Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Etwan
Moore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's a shooting guard. Like I said, Jrue Holiday, you know, I don't know if they can keep him or if they want to trade him and try to get some of those wingman pieces around. Mm-hmm. You know, cause if you can get you a point guard that can just distribute the ball, because that's what you're going to need, a point guard. You do not need a shoot first point guard on this team with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins down low. You definitely going to need a pass first point guard that can penetrate the defense, dump it off to one of those two big guys. And it's also good too, because you can also rest and alternate one of them, keep one of them in while other of them get the rest, and vice versa. So I mean, right now, are they contenders? You know, no. I think they still on the outside looking in as far as playoffs is concerned. You know, so I wouldn't go that far and say contenders, but I will say, you know, in the years to come, because they still, like, they're like 1, 2, 3, 4. They're the worst team in the West. You know, they still got some work to do. They could make a little run. I mean, you know, depending, because Sacramento is up there now that you let DeMarcus go. I think Sacramento is like the eighth seed, or Denver is. So, you know, I can see them making a run, but Denver will have to do some losing for the Pelicans to get in. But then, you know, you get in first round, you're going to play Golden State or St. Ann, either Golden State or St. Ann, and get ounced in the first round. So at this point, I would say it would be best for them not to make the playoffs and, you know, try to just, well, no, because they gave up their 2017 draft picks. So
that's right.
They got the draft picks. So free agency, I would say just bank on free agency, you know, and see what they can do from there, man. But, you know, I won't say they contenders. Like, to me, when you say contenders, it's like someone that has a shot of at least making it to the Western Conference Finals or Eastern Conference Finals or better when you say contenders. So, no, I wouldn't say they contenders.
I think they can definitely compete, man. I mean, we all know, man, DeMarcus Cousins is definitely top five talent in the league. Top 10 player in the league.
Oh yeah, he's top. He's top 10 talent. He's top 10.
Yeah,
talent. Yeah.
So you have these two guys that's counter to what the league is now. The league is spread them out, shoot threes. We're gonna run up and down the court. We know DeMarcus Cousins can shoot threes. He can work in and out. But basically, what they have are two big men that can beat you up. We know DeMarcus Cousins can beat you up on the inside. Nobody can stop him. He's the best center in the league. We know Anthony Davis is a freaking guard in a 7-foot body. You know, and funny thing, I was listening to an interview that he said, man, he didn't adjust his game until I think he got to college. He continued to play as a guard.
Yep.
Or it may have been until he got to the NBA.
But because Calipari was saying that Anthony Davis was actually holding back offensively because, you know, when he was in Kentucky, he was known for being that rim protector, you know, that rim protector rebounder that can also – but Calipari always say, like, yeah, Anthony Davis really – he actually held back a lot of his offensive skills in college because he was known for his defense so much. So, yeah, he's always had the offensive game.
I mean, obviously, you know, 4-5, DeMarcus at the 5, AD at the 4. Jrue Holiday, and I think that's the big thing. That's the key for me, man. Is that they managed to keep Jrue Holiday at the point, who's been playing great as of late. Caspi is a solid 3. So he's had a chance to play in Sacramento, he's put up numbers. So I think he's not a name that most people know, but that's a solid pickup that they got in return. So really that 2 spot is the question mark. And I think if they manage to keep Terrence Jones, they still have Monta Ellis. I don't know what they're going to do with Solomon Hill, but they paid him, so they got to do something with him. And Tim Frazier was balling while Jrue Holiday was out. So they have some pieces on the bench that can come in and keep the party going. Plus you can stagger AD and DeMarcus Cousins, you know, kind of the way they do in Cleveland. So, to me, I think they can compete. I think it's really going to come down to Gentry. I don't think the players he has fits the style of basketball he likes to coach. But you have two of the top 10 players on your team right now. Unguardable.
Entering their primes at that. At
yes.
That.
Oh, no doubt. Keep franchise in mind. Yeah, players. Boogie is what, 26, and Anthony Davis is 23.
If they can get that 8 seed, and Denver's playing really well, you're right, B. They've been balling, man. Nokic is killing it.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough to get that 8 spot, but if they do, if they get that 8 spot, man, and they rolling, they may not beat Golden State, but when you got forces like that, that could be a problem, man. And we know Golden State. We know Golden State can't handle physical
teams
like that.
Yeah, they soft down low. They definitely soft down low.
In the playoffs where things are physical, hey, that's not a problem.
You need balance, Ken.
Yeah, it's not enough.
I know. But Jrue Holiday is still there to kind of give them some perimeter.
Drew's a bum that can't stay healthy, man.
If he's healthy, he's been playing good as of late, people, though.
But look, how long is he gonna stay healthy? He's probably gonna get hurt next week. You know, I don't want him to get hurt, but I'm just saying.
I mean, you know, it's possible. They don't have the balance they need, but I think all the guys on the perimeter, if they could just do just enough, like if Jrue Holiday is, well, we're getting off into the weeds, but
Ken, answer this question. What are all of those guys that you talking about? Name me somebody outside of Jrue.
Yeah, I know. Remember, I was struggling. I was struggling.
All right. I'm looking at the roster now. So we have Etuan Moore. I mean, he's a body.
Solid backup.
Yeah, he's a body. You know, but he has to start. If he can hit shots, you know, he's good.
It's not enough. We talking about Golden State that has the best perimeter offense. Yes, the Twin Towers, they're going to do damage because we see what happens with Memphis, right? And what Boogie and AD are is a better Mark Gasol and Zach Randolph. So they're going to get theirs, and they're going to push, I think, Golden State to possibly 6 games, but it's not enough. They need more balance. Next year is the year that they can make some real moves. But this year, all they can do is just make the playoffs, show people that these two guys are a dynamic duo, the best big man tandem since Tim Duncan and David Robinson, since Olajuwon and Ralph Sampson. You know what I'm saying? And the thing is that we haven't seen two guys in their prime.
Right.
So if they do stay together, if DeMarcus does decide to re-sign with New Orleans, that's going to be a problem. And remember, if CP doesn't sign an extension, he's an agent. So he is?
Yeah, he said he is. I think it's like $200 million or something like that.
Okay. But either way, they need them a point guard. A more reliable point guard than Jrue Holiday. They need them a shooter to space the floor. They need a 3-and-D guy. To see, balance out that rotation.
Yep. I said the same thing.
that's how you build it. See, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. See, everybody's talking about, oh, well, you know, Golden State brand about. It doesn't matter. Everybody has to find a style, and then you maximize that style because every style has a weakness. And at the end of the day, if you have two big men, then you have to balance that out with good. Okay to good perimeter play. It doesn't have to be exceptional because your front line is exceptional.
Your front line is, see? We're on the same page, people. We're on the same page.
And ladies and gentlemen, the other voice that you hear is the fourth member, our boy FIFO. I forgot to even introduce you, man. What's going on, FIFO?
No, man, it's all good, man. I damn near forgot it was Tuesday, man.
It's all good.
We're on the same. I'm glad. Me all and FIFO on the same page, man.
Yeah, man. Look, man. When I saw that, I said, oh, my God. Oh my!
I think everyone said, "Oh my God!" We all couldn't believe it.
Like, yeah, man. A lot of people was asking me, "Can they coexist? Can they hoop? Can they ball? What's it gonna do?" I said, "Look, man. Them boys gonna work because they don't have to occupy the same space of the court. That's right. The difference between like Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor. Both of those guys need to be in the paint. They're not venturing more than 8 to 10 feet away from that rim.
Right.
But both of these guys, off the dribble, can shoot and create and pass. They both have back to the basket game. They both have mid range game. Come on, man. And then I heard this crazy stat on SportsCenter that DeMarcus Cousins is the most utilized post player in the NBA, but he also shoots 36% from three. So
that's good for someone his size.
Exactly. You got a guy that can kill you inside and out, and AD kills you inside and out. AD's the rim protector, but DeMarcus gets boards. Like, man, it's gonna be crazy, man.
And on top of that, FIFO, if you go to NBA.com, he's the number one clutch player in the league right now through 38 games. DeMarcus Cousins.
Look. All of these advanced stats, I believe what my eyes tell me over stats. I'm not saying he's not clutch. I'm not saying that, but I don't know if he's the most clutch player. The most clutch player that I've seen this season, Isaiah Thomas.
He can definitely play.
But I think there's still something in those numbers that could carry over in New Orleans, and I think there's something to that, and it's something that a lot of people don't know. So because I didn't know it, I was surprised to see it or hear it. But remember, this guy's been buried in Sacramento for years.
That's a good point.
We don't get a chance to see him play.
That's a good point. A lot of times we don't. I mean, unless you just, you know, you got the league pass, you really didn't see Boogie Cousins get down. So it's going to be interesting. So I guess really where we are, as far as, I guess the next question I was going to ask is, can these two guys play together? FIFA, you started touching on that. How well do you think they will work and mesh together? And do you think it'll take long for them to get it together?
Can't touch on the point. Not only do they need to upgrade their point guard, they need to upgrade their head coach, because I don't think Gentry's going to be the guy. And I think, like I've been saying, there's certain guys, especially Gentry, when you make a move like this, if it doesn't work out early next season, he's going to be gone just ASAP. Like he's right. Not going to have a lot of leash. But can they work? Yes. How they're going to work, I'm not sure, you know, because again, you got to put AD in the pick and roll, you know. What I would do is I would definitely play high low with them, pick and roll with AD at the top, put DeMarcus down low, get AD to rock, and really force defenses to play them one on one, because you cannot play them one on one. They're going to dominate the majority of their matchups, and now it's kind of pick your poison. So that's what I would do. Obviously, you need guard penetration and shooting to space out the floor, because then what's going to happen is they're just going to collapse. But I don't know what Gentry has up his sleeve, because, and you alluded to it a little bit as well, where this is not the squad that, this is not the style of play that Gentry wants to coach, right? And I think this happened also in LA, when you could have brought back Phil Jackson, or you could have got D'Antoni. And Buss and Kupchak went and got D'Antoni because they wanted to bring back Showtime Lakers, but that's not what the roster was built for. So if you're going to get D'Antoni, then you got to build a D'Antoni roster, because we see what he's doing in Houston. The man can coach, but you got to play his style. This is not Gentry's style. So I don't know what's going to happen, but you got to get a coach in there that can maximize these guys.
That's a good point. And hopefully, and one thing that people have to keep in mind too, is that Boogie, with another full year on his deal, they have more time. And that speaks to what you were saying, FIFO. If Gentry can't turn it around, it's going to be a quick turnaround for Gentry, because you've got until, at least at the very latest, until the trade deadline next season. So it's not like, you know, they will have enough time to figure out and see if these two guys can play together and how their games mesh. And more importantly, if they can surround them with other talent. B, what's your take on that? The two of them playing together.
I think that was the first thing I was thinking when the trade actually happened. I was like, well, you know, like FIFO mentioned earlier, they both can do so much. They're not like have to be on the block all the time or both clogging up the paint all the time. One can either one of them can kind of fade out a little bit, you know, to that 15 to 18 footer and vice versa. So I'm always thinking like it's really dependent on, I guess, the like people say it too. And I mentioned that guard play, man, is really if mm-hmm. I think if they can get a good point guard, you know, that can distribute the ball. You do not need no shoot first point guard with those big guys down there, man, with both of those. I think it just really depends on that. I think they definitely can make it work. I'm pretty sure both of those guys playing former Wildcats, you know what I'm saying? Right. Guys, you know, Kentucky Wildcats, I'm pretty sure they're like, yo, man, they thinking like, yo, we can make this shit work, man. We got to make it work. I just don't really know. I hope it does. I mean, because we really need some stuff like this. I love when stuff like this shake up the NBA. I really do. I love it. So, yeah, I mean, it just really depends on that guard play, man, because, you know, if you really if they don't have good guard play, it's going to be hard for them to kind of do their thing, man, you know. And not saying that they're not going to get along. Mm-hmm. It just won't work out at the end of the day. So
you mentioned Holiday earlier. I think, and I was just looking here at the numbers, I think under the cap, I think they have enough to sign him. I think that's going to be important, you know, unless they can find someone that's serviceable. But like you said, in that kind of offense, you don't really necessarily need a shoot first guy. You need somebody that's going to make sure, like FIFO said, that the high low game, really getting both guys involved. I mean, like people don't understand, and this speaks to what Ken just said. I mean, Boogie's averaging 28 and 11. I mean, like, he's averaging 28 points, and we don't see him on a night-to-night basis. You know, the Kings games aren't ever featured on, you know, the Saturday night NBA game. So we're going to really get a chance to see these two guys blossom, at least for the next year or so. And if it doesn't, I haven't seen anything to let me think that it wouldn't work. But if for some reason it doesn't, and then keep in mind, they gave up fish heads and rice to get him. So it's not like if it didn't work, at the very least, they could trade him for more pieces to put around Anthony Davis since he is the centerpiece. Now, the flip side of this, man, is the Kings. it's funny, man, to me, because when I think about the Kings, other than that run that they had with Chris Webber and Peja and Bibby and those guys, like, the Kings are one of those teams that, at least, like, for me, and I've been watching basketball since 1980, they suck, like, all the time. Like, you know, I mean, up until Golden State had this run these last few years, I could say that about Golden State, too. But, I mean, what happened here, man? I mean, like, and we heard the audio from Vlade Divac. He said verbatim that he had a better deal on the table 2 days ago, or at least prior to the trade. So
I wonder, you know, what that deal was.
Man, you know, here's the funny thing, B, and I don't know if you guys heard this, but there was a proposal for Andre Drummond.
Oh, I knew that. I knew that.
And he shut it down. So think about it. And FIFO, when we were texting, we heard about it, FIFO said something that I thought was key, like that you never really get the value, you know, value for value, especially when you're talking about star for star. But I mean, if you let Boogie go, at the very least, you would think that you would want to get a guy like Andre Drummond. You know what I mean? I mean, and so they get Buddy Hield.
I would welcome Cousins to the Pistons any day. He got that attitude as well, man. Please, he'll fit the Pistons perfect.
So let's start there, man. B, how would you grade this? What grade would you give the Kings, man? I'm giving them an F, and I really don't have much else to say.
I mean, like, I give them a fat F. I was, who was I listening to? Someone went down the line of, like, all the dumb decisions Kings have been making, you know, since they broke up the whole Weber, like, since that era was over. Like, they've been making some stupid, like, passing up on players, picking Jimmy Fredette. He didn't pan out. It was, I forgot who I was listening to, but man, they were just listing all the stupid stuff the Kings were doing. So yeah, I would definitely give this an F-. I mean, unfortunately, you know, for them getting Tyree Evans, he's coming back to the Kings. But, you know, he is almost kind of like saying he's a bust, because he started off like that dude, man. Like, we really thought that Tyree Evans was going to be a force in the NBA, man, and being like a good multi-position point guard, shooting guard, small forward type player. But it's just not panning out. He can't stay healthy. Just like Drew Holiday, just can't stay healthy. But yeah, I think on the Kings side, yeah, I would give this a flat out F. On the Pelicans side, oh yeah, as of right now on paper, they got an A. You know what I'm saying? It's looking good for them. You put together two, what we always say is two probably the best big guys in the league right now, and 1A and 1B with AD and Cousins. So they definitely get an A on that side. It's just they just got to put the right pieces around them. They on to something. But yeah, Kings definitely they get a low grade for this for that trade.
What about you, FIFO? How are you grading this for the Kings?
I give them a D plus, and the reason why I'm giving them a D plus is when it comes to trades in the NBA, it's all about timing. Because like I said in the text message thread, you're never gonna get equal value. Somebody's gonna win, somebody's gonna lose. Because that's just business, right? Like somebody's always going to have leverage. And the longer you keep a disgruntled player, the less leverage you have. Because time is against you. Because that contract is going to expire. Therefore, giving that player more leverage. Therefore, the organization does not have the leverage. Especially when you have somebody like Boogie that is an exceptional talent. If you... And the hardest thing is for an organization to be true to themselves. We have not maximized Boogie. We haven't put a team around Boogie. You know what? We're not going to win with Boogie. So we need to get rid of Boogie so that way we can get more assets down the line and hopefully build for the future. If they would have made this trade a year ago, I've been saying that they needed to trade DeMarcus Cousins. They would have got a lot more. And just like you alluded to, Kyle, Vlade said he had more on the table 2 days ago. And the closer that he kept getting, now, in this instance, it's kind of Russian roulette because you may have waited and somebody would have got desperate and you could have maybe got a better deal.
Right.
But if you were realistic with yourself and traded him a year ago, they would have got a lot more. So with getting two picks in this draft, a first and a second, the second pick doesn't really pan out too much typically. But having two picks in this draft, Sacramento's going to get a top pick in this loaded draft. They're going to have two picks in this draft. Hopefully, for Sacramento's sake, the Pelicans don't make the playoffs. So that way they have two lottery picks in this draft. If that happens, that's why I'm giving them the plus. Because now you have Buddy Hield, which is a rookie, struggling, stayed 4 years in college. We don't know what he's going to be. Now, Vivek Ranadive, I think he's off a little bit because he's saying that he thinks Buddy Hield
just
has...
Just a little?
A lot. He wants to play 4-on-5.
4-on-5.
Yeah. And he thinks Buddy Hield has Steph Curry potential. I don't think he has Steph Curry potential, but I think he could be a solid player. I was never high on Buddy Hield. It's recorded, documented on this show. Either way, he's a young player that can mature to be at least a solid pro. You get two picks this year. You know you're still going to be bad next year, so you're going to get another pick and another good draft so you can actually accumulate talent the same way Philly did. So that's why I'm giving it a plus. Now, if Buddy Hield was better, I would have gave this a C, maybe a B. But because Buddy Hield is not even averaging 10 points, because DeMarcus made and shoots a better percentage from three than Buddy Hield, that's the reason why I have to give it a D+.
Man, I'm going to give it a C.
Wow. You grading on a curve.
Look, maybe I am. A lot of people are bashing the Kings for this trade. It doesn't make sense. When I saw it, I was like, that's ridiculous. They're not going to do that. Who would do that? That's a stupid. Okay, well, the Kings would do that, and they did it. But when you look at this franchise, and you know, for those that have been following the show, and I know you guys know, I'm a big-time Boogie Cousins fan. I despise what they've done with him since he's been there. You know, I always go back to, and this was kind of the basis for my argument, that time we had that big discussion. When they had Mike Malone, and they were like 9-6, and they were winning games, and Cousins was buying into the system, he got hurt. By the time he came back, they were like 11-16 or 11-18 or whatever, and then they fired Mike Malone, and that was a waste of season. They have wasted this guy's talent for for the whole time he's been there. So for the Kings, you already know what you have with him. You already have you've already proven that you can't put a team around him, and it's just a relationship that's just not going to work. He loved the city of Sacramento, and he wanted to be there. But everything that the organization has done up to this point hasn't helped him maximize his potential.
In terms of, they haven't won 35 games since he's been drafted by him.
And it's crazy. And look, Cousins is not LeBron. Cousins can't step on a court and make everybody make bums into serviceable players, into a winning record. LeBron's that unique. We've only seen one of him. So you need pieces. You need other pieces around him. They haven't put another star that I know of around him since he's been there. Look, let's start over. You've gotten yourself out of a $200 million extension. You've gotten rid of a player that the city loved and loved to hate, that players, is rumored, didn't like playing with him, and he's destroyed locker rooms. So now at this point, you got Buddy Hield, with the owner loves him. I believe in Buddy Hield. I think Buddy Hield's going to do some things. But by the time Buddy Hield gets going, the NBA may have changed. If he's comparing him to Curry, and he thinks he's going to do what Curry's doing, with all of these big men that's coming into the league right now, that style of play may be gone. But you have draft picks. And if you get lucky with the picks you have, you bring in the right coaches, you bring in the right assistant coaches and the people on staff to develop the players you have, maybe you can do some things. But like you said, Kyle, they haven't been right since the Chris Webber days. They got a guy that's on the level and may be better than Chris Webber and couldn't put a team around him, and they had a formula on how to do it. It's just, you know, amazing to me. For me, I think, yes, the trade doesn't make sense right now, but we won't know what the trade will become, the picks will become in the future. George Hill turned into Kawhi Leonard. Yeah, you're not going to get equal value for Cousins. Who's going to give you equal value for Cousins? Because the player that they may have that's his equal, it's probably they don't want to trade. So you were going to lose regardless. So I think that for what they want to do, I think it's a C. When you look at what they got back in return, it looks terrible now. But we'll see what those picks turn into, and we'll see what Buddy Hield turns into.
Well, that's a good point, Ken. I mean, I think you're right. Especially with NBA trades, we don't know what the end result is until you actually make the picks with those. I guess the frustrating thing is, and none of us are Kings fans, but the frustrating thing has to be for the Kings and that organization, and more importantly, the fans, is that like it's just been one thing after the other. I mean, like they've had players, they've let them go. I mean, keep in mind, just a few years ago, this team almost moved. You know, it took a real bold move by the city, as well as Kevin Johnson, the mayor, a former point guard from the Phoenix Suns, who is the mayor of Sacramento, to keep them from moving to, I think they were headed to Seattle, if I'm not mistaken. Things have just been going downhill. So anybody listening to this podcast who are Kings fans, man, keep your head up. That's about all I can say, because I am almost positive that the ownership, and you know, I listened to that clip of Vlade Divac speaking to the media, I'm not so certain that was his call. It may have been, you know, the owner's call. And it just looks to me like the owner is a guy who, like FIFO just mentioned, you know, who thinks he could be the next, you know, Steph Curry, which there's only one Steph Curry. So I don't know. I hope it you know, pans out for him, but it does not look good for the Kings right now as well. And they seem to be the laughingstock of the NBA, because they basically, this could go down as being the biggest steal since The Lakers stole Pau Gasol from Memphis. But even in that, eventually one of those picks that they got from the Lakers, they got Marc Gasol, and they were able to have enough cap room to re-sign and make a long-term deal for Zach Randolph. So while they didn't get any championships in Memphis, you know, they could at least say that they got something. I don't really see what the Kings are going to get from this trade other than the fact that they got Boogie out of the paint. So we'll see.
Oh, can I need to amend that. Amend that to a C. I need to amend that to a C minus, not a C. I'm sorry. C minus.
You are listening to the Dead End Sports Podcast. I am the host, 12 Kyle, joined by my boys, Beezy, FIFO, and Ken. Make sure that you subscribe to our podcast and pass the word. Moving on to the next subject, the All-Star game just happened this past weekend. And, of course, one of the biggest stories coming into the All-Star weekend was the plot of Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. The two estranged teammates were back on the floor together, this time in the same locker room, this time on the same team. And I think they only played like 90-something seconds together on the floor at the same time. Obviously, Durant was the starter. Westbrook was named a reserve. Durant had a lob pass where, you know, Westbrook caught it, threw it down. It was a nice dunk. They came to the sideline, and the team, you know, guys started jumping up and down and clapping for him and everything like that. Like, you know, and then you saw comments on social media, oh, the beef is over. The beef is over. I don't know about that, but Ken, what do you make of this? I don't even want to call it beef, cause it's not beef. What do you make of this discourse between Westbrook and is everything healed from them playing in All-Star game?
Absolutely not. And this is beef. This is beef, man. It may be one-sided.
But it is one-sided.
I've never really seen this side of Russ before. Until like now, I knew he had a high competitive spirit, a drive like no other. But this chippiness, you in the All-Star game and you pushing John Wall out the way, you're really like, you're having fun, but you're playing hard at the same time. You like hit like four or five threes in a row. You know, you're sizing up Isaiah Thomas. You know, you're D'ing him up too. Like, he was out there to win that game while everybody else throwing lob passes and having fun, this, that, and the other. That's what I love about Russell Westbrook. He was out there to compete. This beef, this thing with them is real. I know it's real with Russell Westbrook. This whole lob pass, this, that, and the other, I mean, it's basketball. What's he going to do? You know, Russ is going to go out there and play basketball. You know, and I think even he said that. So a lot of it was media driven. What's Russell and KD going to do? They weren't even talking to each other. So, but when you put them on the court, they're going to play basketball. That's just what they do. So I didn't make anything of it, but let me tell you something. That game, when KD went back to OKC and when Russell Westbrook was going back to the bench and he was yelling at KD, "I'm coming. I'm coming." I knew then and right there that Russell Westbrook is serious. It's not a game with him. I think the more and more this season has went along, the more and more KD, whenever they play, the Warriors play the Thunder, try to run up the score and beat them down and show up the Thunder because they don't have the pieces to compete, started to really rub Russell Westbrook the wrong way. And it's getting to the point where Russell is tired of it. And his true feelings, he is letting it be known. Russell Westbrook got a problem with KD. Trust and believe what I'm telling you. The way he snapped at KD, that was real. This is beef. KD don't want these problems because that's not KD. Russ? Man, Russ ain't having it, man. And throwing an alley-oop, throwing a pass and catching an alley-oop, that ain't going to solve anything. No. Russ is serious. And I'm loving every minute of it. Because they've been too nice out there on the court.
No doubt. No doubt. What about you, B? What do you make of the two of them playing together in this All-Star game?
Nothing. I actually agree. I agree with Charles Barkley, man. Just, I mean, I understand you want to have the drama. You want to create something. You want to, you know, NBA is good for doing that. But just get over it. I mean, yeah, I'm with Ken, too. Like, Russell is serious. I love Russell. He's so, he is definitely throwback. But I got to go with Sir Charles on this one, man. Just let it go. Let's just continue. You know, it is what it is. We know Russell had a problem with KD. He's looking at him as a traitor because you left. Not only that you left OKC. Right. Not only that you left OKC, but you left him to the team that we were up 3-1 against that just won 73 games. You know, so I understand the frustration and all that. But just come on, media. Just let it go. I understand it helps the ratings for NBA. Let it go. I honestly agree with Charles Barkley. Like, I was, when he said it, I was like, thank you. Like, I thought I was the only one that was like sick of this now. Like, yeah, it was cool leading up to the game when, especially the game when Durant went back to OKC for the first time. You know, the games at Golden State. Okay, yeah, it's cool, but like, I wanted to see when Durant go back to OKC. Like, that's what I was waiting for. You know, that was cool. And you could tell when Russell was barking at him, it was almost kind of like a, yeah, I'm coming. Yeah, you a traitor. Like, whatever. You went to all those high power offense guys or whatever, and I'm still out here, you know, balling and I'm trying to put my foot on y'all throat, even though it still didn't help. But, you know, yeah, at this point, I'm sick of it. I mean, I'm sick of it. And the alley oop, I even tweeted it the day before. Yes, I think the night of the All-Star or the day after the All-Star game when I was watching ESPN, and that was the headline, the story, a freaking alley oop in a freaking All-Star game. Like, really? That's the main story of that ESPN is talking about? Like, come on, stop. Like, I'm sorry. I was sick of it, man. I'm like, come on, y'all. It was a freaking alley-oop. Jesus Christ. Oh, man. Look at what. Check this out. They was wide open. Slowing in slow motion every time. Like, we ain't never seen an alley-oop before. Come on, y'all. Stop.
It was so cheesy.
It was so cheesy, man. Like,
the cheering was cheesy.
Sick of it. I'm sick of it.
I you know what? I kind of was with you, B, until I saw Russ get at KD in OKC. Like, a lot of it is media driven, and I'm like, okay, man, are you guys really going to drive this into the ground? But when I saw him get at KD, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I'm with you. The media, it's time for the media to stop, but I'm all for the action on the court.
Look. The alley-oop in the 90 seconds of playing time, what it did was it broke the ice. There is beef. It's real beef. It is one-sided, and it's never going to go away. Just understand that. And as long as that's the case, the media is, at least for this season, it's going to be a story, because Russell Westbrook is the story. If Russell Westbrook came out here and he was just having a decent season, 20 points a game, 4, you know, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, nobody would be talking about it. This man is getting triple doubles. This man has elevated his level of aggression, and now it's pointed at a person. Russ, we've never seen that before, right? Like, because we've seen other guys that are extremely aggressive, like Russ, right? KG, Michael Jordan come to mind. But it was against everybody. But we know that there is a special moment every single time that Russ is going to see KD. What that All-Star game did was allow them to be more cordial when they are around each other. Because they're going to be around each other at some point in time, right? I think Russ can give him the head nod now. I don't know. I don't even know if he's going to speak to him, but he could give him the bro head nod. You know what I'm saying? Before, it was nothing. It wasn't even eye contact. But now he could get the head nod. So I'm okay with it. I think the media is eating it up. I don't think that they're overblowing it. They're doing their job. The media is trying to take a dramaful situation and cover it. What's the problem? What's the problem? It's not like we're talking about two bums here. We're talking about two of the top five, top 10 players in the NBA. I'm perfectly fine with it. Now, the All-Star game is not going to change anything. It just allows those two guys to be cordial, man. I love it. I love the fact that we have a 1970s, 1980s, 1990s type of player in terms of mentality still playing in this league. And what have I always said? KD gets a pass. KD's soft. You know what I'm saying? And Russell Westbrook, all he's doing is exposing that every single time he gets. Every single time. I love it. Because now we have a rival. Now we have... See, it was just like hip-hop a couple years ago. Everybody wanted to be best friends. You know what? It's not like that no more. And I like it. That's what the NBA needs.
Mm-hmm. You know what, man? I think you guys make some great points. I think for me, I kind of side with B on this one. I get it. I understand what it was. It's funny because like when I saw the commentary on social media on Twitter and everything, I was just like, it's an alley-oop. I mean, what was? Watch the play again. You know, Russ threw him the ball. Kevin got the ball on the block, threw it back up in the air because Russ made a cut to the basket. What else was he supposed to do? Nah, I ain't going to pass it to you. We ain't cool. Nah, it is what it is. Like you said, it is one-sided. I think Russell feels some type of way because Kevin Durant left without, you know, at the very least. And at this point, here's the thing. We don't know Kevin Durant. We don't know Russell Westbrook. So we're only left to assume what we think we might know. Based on, you know, their personalities. Russell Westbrook, by all means, has a reason to be upset. But I think at some point, you know, we've all played sports. As time moves on, you know, you move on. And I think, to be honest, they may not be cool again until after they're finished playing some 10, 15 years from now. But I think right now, I don't think it's beef as in like, you know, if they saw each other in the street, he'd slap them or anything like that. But I think, you know,
I think so.
I don't think so, Ken, because here's the thing. At the very least, all we know is that they were coworkers. Now, I don't know about you guys, but.
Nah, they brothers, Kyle. They brothers.
Nah. You
Katie
can't come
they
on, man.
Brothers,
you,
Kyle.
You play sports too. Everybody that you play with, some guys, they will ever be as teammates. Period. You know, it's funny. I see you guys more than I see teammates that I play college ball with that live here in Atlanta. And I see y'all more than I see them. But there's a reason for that. Like, we're closer than I am to them. Like, I always, if I see them, I see them. They're teammates. And it's all love when I see them, but that's it. You know what I mean? Like, all we'll ever be is teammates. We ain't talking about going playing golf. We're not talking about, you know, hanging out or catching a movie or anything like that. And that's not to say that KD and Russell Westbrook aren't cool, but we're assuming that they were that close that maybe they weren't. I mean, obviously if he felt the need to leave, which he could very, you know, he had every right to leave, but I think now would I've handled it? I would have handled it totally different from that. I don't think he should have sent him a text. He should have saw that man face to face and said, "Hey man, I'm leaving." You know, that would have been the right thing to do. But you know, that being said, I don't think it's beef, but I do enjoy the fact that the chip that's on Russell Westbrook's shoulder is even bigger because I think we're getting more from him. And then, you know, subsequently, you know, Kevin Durant has to, you know, he has to kind of eat that. And Ken, like you, I enjoy the back and forth going with them. But the thing is, it's kind of unfair, man, because KD knows that, you know, on their best day in a 7-game series, they're not beating them. You know, Russell doesn't have enough people around him, but what I took from the All-Star game, ultimately, guys, is that Russell Westbrook feels like this. When he puts on his uniform and it says Thunder on it, if you have a jersey on that says Thunder on it as well, he's with you. You know what I'm saying? And you know that he feels like you're with him. And the same applied for that All-Star game. They had jerseys on that say West. So, you know, for that particular game, he felt like Kevin Durant was with him. But once the clock hit zero, he was back to being a Thunder again, and it's me against the world. And I love the mentality. I love the throwbackness from Russell Westbrook. But you know, I don't I understand why they made it more than what it is, but I don't think it's as big as or as heavy as people make it out to be. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, particularly if these two teams run into each other in the playoffs. It's been one-sided. I mean, Kevin Durant's averaged almost 38 points against them. I think he's only missed like 20 shots. So he's shooting like 60-something percent against them. So it's not like he's gone and you know, fallen off when he's played against them. So it'll be interesting to see. I thought the media made a lot of it than what it really was. You know, the fact that they walked past each other in the hallway, didn't speak. And I was like, come on, man. It almost felt like they were trying to make something that wasn't there. Is there tension? There could be. I mean, we don't know because, again, we don't really know them. But as far as the alley, like B said, I agree. It's a play. I mean, they made a great play. And, you know, it was one of 1,000 alley-oops that we saw in the All-Star game. Moving on, big news out of Los Angeles. Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak, the owner and GM, were fired by Jeannie Buss, and Showtime is back. Irvin Magic Johnson is now the new he was hired on, I think, like 2 weeks ago as a consultant to the Lakers. And, of course, Magic was on TV and on ESPN talking about some things that he wanted to do. And then we get the news today that Magic is now the president of basketball operations. They are looking to hire a GM. At the time of this recording, a GM has not yet been hired, but it's rumored that it will be former agent Rob Pelinka. Well, actually, Rob Pelinka is still an agent. He's James Harden agent and used to be Kobe Bryant's agent. So there's the shakeup, man. I mean, Lakers fans have been complaining about Jim Buss being in the way. And I think from what all accounts, it seems the straw that may have broke the camel's back was the trade for Boogie Cousins. Was the Kings made an inquiry to the Lakers. And apparently Jim Buss talked about it. Mitch Kupchak talked about it. But Jeannie and Magic knew nothing about it. So that could have been the final straw for those two guys as Jeannie Buss fires her brother. So let's start right there, man. FIFO, your take on Magic being back in L.A.?
It's about damn time. It's about time the Jeannie did something. You know what I'm saying? Because and here's the thing. Jim said that he was going to quit if they didn't make the playoffs in 5 years. Obviously, he didn't want to fire himself, so somebody had to do it. So it was just a matter of time. It was inevitable. Especially the writing was on the wall when you bring somebody like Magic Johnson, a guy that stature, somebody that has that type of history with L.A., you know your time was up. You know your time was up. And I read an interesting article that Jim Buss had a couple of favorites, right? Like Andrew Bynum. So he found Andrew Bynum. He wanted to keep Andrew Bynum. His dad said, do whatever it takes, trade whoever, obviously outside of Kobe, to get CP3. He wanted to keep Bynum instead of trading Bynum for CP3. So think about that trade, right? Everybody knows about the trade that would have been, where it was Paul Gasol, Lamar Odom, and all of that stuff for CP3. At the time, New Orleans was owned by the NBA. If they would have just traded Bynum for CP3, you would have Paul Gasol in his prime, Lamar Odom in his prime, CP3 in his prime, and Kobe on the beginning of the decline. That's the type of that's what a good GM does. Doesn't matter who I found. This guy's better than this guy. You guys are willing to take this guy. You know what? Give me CP3. Another person, Robert Sacre. Sacre took up roster salary and a roster spot that could have been given to Hassan Whiteside. That also they could have made a move for either Kyle Lowry and or Isaiah Thomas. And they didn't like either one of those two guards. Plus, they didn't even want to invite Hassan Whiteside because of Robert Sacre. So when you make egregious moves like that, it's been time for you to bounce, bro. It's been time. Because none of those guys, name me one guy that Mitch Kupchak, matter of fact, name me a situation outside of when Kobe was still in his prime, they had Paul Gasol, that they made a good move. They have not made one good move. Steve Nash was an abomination. Dwight Howard was a freak show. And then when you get LaMarcus Aldridge in the room, and he directly asked Kupchak, who's going to start at center next to me? You don't have an answer? That's a problem. Because how are you going to attract other big-name free agents when you don't have a plan, when you don't know that you can get somebody, when you can't assure a perennial all-star something of that nature? Come on, man. It's been time. Magic Johnson has the cachet. Magic Johnson has the pool. He obviously has the basketball knowledge, and I think he's going to do a great job.
I saw this coming when they had hired him as like a consultant or something. I was like, I was thinking something brewing. I think he's going to end up being, you know, like a full-time employee for the Lakers, and look what happened. And I think that's good because it seemed like they finally have someone in office that cares about putting together a winning organization, you know, and the Bussin and Kupchak, they just seemed like they weren't in it anymore. So I'm, you know, that's cool to have a Hall of Famer, what some people consider one of the, you know, the greatest Laker of all time, and Magic Johnson to be, you know, to be heading the basketball operations. You know, now, hey, the clock is on him. You know, let's see what Magic can do in these next, you know, few years or whatever. You know, can he put up or shut up? You know, he's always been the one sitting back complaining about, you know, what busting them not doing and stuff like right, that. Right. So now it's time for him to put up or shut up now. You know, now that you got this position, here, Magic, hey, we finally give you the keys. Now let's see what you can do. Let's see what you can put together, if you can put together a winning team and bring. Because, you know, for Laker fans, this is hard for them. This is tough. You know, this is a historic franchise that's known for competing or winning. You know what I'm saying? And for them not to – they don't even have a superstar. You know, if you look throughout the last, you know, 20, 25 years, you know, you had the Magic Kareem. And then, you know, then you had the Shaq and Kobe. Like, you know, when they had their little downtime, well, not even going to say down, but they were still at least making the playoffs. The Van Axels and Eldon Campbell's years and stuff like that. You know, they were still, like, post-Magic. They were still at least kind of competing. Then you brought in Shaq and Kobe. And then, you know, Kobe ran off Shaq. And then, you know, Kobe had his hard times, his Shmush Parkers and Kwame Brown years. And you got that. So now after Kobe's gone, you don't have that attraction. You know, usually Lakers is always good for having that attractive superstar or superstars, you know, because you in Hollywood. You know, you got to have superstars in your team. You in freaking Hollywood. So, you know, I think Magic is going to try his best to kind of bring that back to LA, because that's, you know, that's is missing. And as of right now, they don't, like, they're going to compete for the next three or four seasons, you know, with that roster, and they don't do anything to improve the roster. So Magic, it's your time to put up a shut up, brother.
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, what do I always say? There's two ways that you build a championship contender. You build it through free agency, or you build it through the draft.
Yeah.
The first move that Magic made was he traded Lou Williams to Houston for a first-round pick. So what that tells me is that he understands where the Lakers are. And you are in a position to continue to accumulate assets. D'Angelo Russell is on the verge of starting to become a consistent player. Brandon Ingram obviously was taken number two this year. Julius Randle, what, a top five, top seven pick a couple years ago, right? So you're starting to have a nuclear. Jordan Clarkson, second round pick a couple years ago. Still a young player, up and coming player. You get another first round pick this year. Obviously, they're going to be in the lottery with their own pick. I think somebody owns it, but I know it's protected. And then now you get the Houston pick as well. So Magic, what he's doing what a GM is supposed to do. You move assets that are no longer valuable to you but are a commodity for somebody else. Do you understand what type of move that is for Houston? That's a win-win situation. What does Houston need a first-round pick for? They are contending now. They need players. They need guys that's going to go get buckets. And they got another guy that's going to go get buckets. And I tell you, if they play Golden State, that might be a shootout for the ages. But either way, let me digress back to the Lakers. Magic Johnson, I think, is going to bring some stability and some foresight, man. I think he has a plan. And with this move, as soon as he got in there, think about it, man. Buss and Kupchak have been in office the whole year. What move have they made? Nothing. Magic gets in there two minutes. Boom, makes a move. You got to make moves, and you can't be scared to pull the trigger. If somebody offers you something nice for Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell, and the lefty Julius Randle, then you got to make the move if it makes sense. You cannot hold, because what did we talk about with Boogie Cousins? The longer you wait, the less value they have, the less leverage you have. That's just business 101. Magic has been successful in business. He's been successful in other franchises. So I definitely think he's going to have the Lakers on the right track.
Yeah, and D'Angelo Russell is losing value by the game.
you don't like D'Angelo Russell, do you?
He cool. Magic Johnson's a businessman, and he's a Laker. He understands that culture. He understands what it takes to win because he's done it five times. You know, so he understands what type of players you need and how to build the team because he's played on great teams himself. And for me, like FIFO said, he's already making moves. So he has and probably has always have a vision for what this team needs to do. They have young talent. They have a head coach that they believe in. Now they have to continue to build on that and stabilize the organization and get it out of this free fall that is in. If what B or Kyle has said is true, that they didn't let Genie and Magic know about Boogie, that's egregious within itself. Because if like people said, if they're asking for Brandon Ingram for Boogie Cousins, and we already know what Boogie Cousins is, we have no clue what Brandon Ingram will be. You got to make that move.
Right.
You got to make that move immediately. It's good to see him there. He's always had a lot to say. And, you know, we've seen this organization be dysfunctional long enough. And I think it's time to see them rise back to the top of the league as one of the top franchises in the NBA.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's just for me, just on a personal note, man, I think I don't know if there's been anybody who's had the kind of success on and off their playing field to this level of magnitude, you know, over an extended period of time, more so than Magic. I mean, other than, you know, that terrible, you know, late night show that he had, the Magic Hour, you know, Magic's got more wins than losses on and off the court. So, you know, he's a businessman. He knows what he's doing. What I think he does a really great job of is that he finds the right people. He doesn't, even in industry, because Magic didn't know much about movies or movie theaters or Starbucks for that matter. But he employed the right people who he trusted to help him, you know, get to where he wanted to go as far as, you know, implementing certain things and implementing certain ideas and his vision. And then it kind of took off from there. You know, so I think him being back with the Lakers is going to be fine. It's going to take some time. But I think one thing that the Lakers don't have to worry about is, one, they don't have to worry about, you know, Kobe's contract anymore, which, you know, and we spoke about this, you know, on previous podcasts, which I understood why Jim Buss did that. But I mean, that contract set them back. And I don't know. We don't know if it was the unwillingness for players to play with Kobe. But for whatever reason, the Lakers have been stuck for the last 3 or 4 years. And that's including the years that they had, these last couple of years that they had with Kobe. So, you know, now you've got money under the cap. You know, there's not, you can't name too many players that wouldn't want to play in LA for the Lakers. I mean, it's not, you know, like I said, it's not the Clippers. We're talking about the Lakers. So this is a, you know, a premier franchise in the NBA. It won't be long before this team is back. It's going to take some time. But, you know, you can already see, like FIFO said, and I didn't even think about it. You just said this, FIFO, like they haven't made any moves. And day one that Magic's in there, he's already made a move already. And you know, there's still more moves that could be made, you know, prior to this coming Thursday's trade deadline. So, you know, I know plenty of Lakers fans, and all of them seem to be in unison in rejoicing in the fact that Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak are up out of the paint. So we'll see what happens with the Lakers. Want to go back real quick to the All-Star game. Much has been made about the competitive effort or lack thereof of the All-Star game. We saw Anthony Davis go for 52 points. I think Russell Westbrook had 42. I mean, he was cooking with the threes. Quietly, Kevin Durant had a triple-double. But there was very little defense or anything else played in the game. I mean, I think we saw one instance where Steph Curry actually laid down on a court, and then a few minutes later, he got banged on by the Greek Freak. So my question is,
I said, that's what his ass get.
So with that being said, and I'll start first with you, B, did the historic night as far as these guys, their play, did it destroy what the All-Star game is, or do you think it saved it?
Save what? What save? Talking about the way they play?
Yeah, as far as like, you know, what you think about, because there's been a, I mean, like, it seemed, and I know you guys saw the telecast, but it seemed like as soon as, even from the TNT crew, as soon as the game ended, everybody started criticizing the game for the lack of defense. I mean, we almost saw 200 points being scored in that game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's starting to turn into the NFL Pro Bowl or whatever. You know, players make so much money. You know, you don't want to risk getting hurt in a pretty much a scrimmage game. You know, yeah, of course. You know, I don't want to sound like an old buggy, but how it used to be back in the 80s, 90s, all that stuff. But yeah, it's just money. You know, I mean, if you an owner, I don't want my guy I'm paying, you know, 27 million a year or whatever to get hurt in the meaningless All-Star game. So I get it. I definitely get it. Yeah. I mean, these players make a lot of money now. So it's just, that's why we get the product that we've been getting in the All-Star game, at least in the fourth quarter. Usually, you know, in previous, you know, like maybe in the mid 2000s, early 2000s, mid, you know, they'd be playing around, but then fourth quarter come, oh, it's a real game. Like, you got defense, you got the best lineups for both East and West out there. But now, I mean, even though the game wasn't like a super blowout at that point, I was thinking like, well, maybe they are gonna kind of turn it up a little bit or whatever. But no, they didn't turn it up, man. They were just still out there lollygagging, laughing. You know, I mean, like I said, I get it. They make a lot of money. They're making a lot of money now, so you gotta protect that investment. It is what it is. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure we're going to be complaining. People are going to be complaining next year and the year after that and the year after that, because it's starting to turn into a Pro Bowl game. I mean, the NFL Pro Bowl. And, you know, we know how we all feel about that as well. So it's just, yeah, it is what it is, unfortunately. I hate to see it that way, but at the same time, I understand it, because it's just too much money that these players are making now.
It's not a watchable game anymore, really. You know, I had it on because I'm just a big basketball fiend like that, but I wasn't really paying attention. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's going to take to change. I don't think it hurts or helps. I'm really indifferent. I think B brought up a great point with these contracts. You don't want to go too hard and actually risk injury in an exhibition like this when you got guys making $200 million. You know what I'm saying? So I understand that aspect. But yeah, man, I don't care, mainly because it's just an exhibition game. And as long as you get dunks and highlights and stuff like that, I think they're doing their job. Me, the basketball purist that I am, the competitor that I am, I definitely want to see these guys get after it, especially maybe not the entire game, but especially the second half. The entire second half, they should go at it. But, you know, it's whatever, man. I don't know what type of ratings they get or whatever. But, yo, to each their own, protect yourself, make your money, have a long career. I'm fine with it.
It was whack. you know, I, like B, I expected them to turn up in the fourth quarter. It never happened. And I was disappointed by that. I mean, this game is deteriorating right before our very eyes. And, you know, much like FIFO, I was watching The Walking Dead, and FIFA wasn't watching The Walking Dead, but I was. But I was watching the game in bits and pieces. And even when The Walking Dead went off, I had it on. but I really wasn't paying that much attention to it. Like, because in all honesty, you can watch the game on Twitter, because all of the highlights that you're really watching the game for will be on Twitter. So, so the, and that's what, you know, you kind of look for. I look for the Tracy McGrady, you know, off the backboard dunk, which LeBron did, managed to execute in the game. All of the alley-oops were kind of boring. So I didn't get it, you know, a lot of joy from that.
And also, can we please stop letting Reggie Miller commentate these games? Please.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. When he asked who was longer, I was like, did he really just say that? And nobody said pause. But yeah, just to kind of wrap up, man, it was whack. Like when Steph Curry laid down on the ground, at that point, I'm like, I'm done. Because you're making a mockery of the sport. Why are you laying on the ground? And you know what? I thought that came after the Greek Freak dunked on him.
That was before.
Like, mm-hmm. So it didn't even make sense. Like, I can see if you laid on the ground afterwards, that kind of makes sense. Ha-ha, that's a little funny. But that happened, man, come on, dog. Like, come on, man. Like, stop it. Stop it. But anyway, man, yeah, man, the game's kind of whack, and I'll probably still have it on, but I won't be paying attention that much.
Yeah, I agree, man. I just, especially like what FIFO said, I was the same way. The game was on, but I really wasn't paying attention. I was doing stuff around the house, and, you know, I'd look up every now and then and see something. But, I mean, like, it's the level of competitiveness was gone. It just looked like a glorified practice. And I've often said this, like, it's been years, man, but I think, like, maybe right around that time where Jordan and Kobe were going at it, and maybe Jordan's final All-Star game, which was, I think, 2003, maybe 2005, there was another one. I remember the year that the East was down by 20 and Steph and AI brought them back. Other than that, you know, these last few years, it has not been competitive at all. And what's interesting that, and can you make a good point, was the score was close. I think the score going into the fourth quarter was, I think the East was up by like 4 or 5. So you're thinking, okay, yeah, well, now it's really about to start cooking. And it was just more of the same. So, nah, if it's going to be that, then no, it really doesn't make any sense for you to tune in, because – and I don't know what they do as far as ratings either, but no, that I didn't see anything that was compelling for me to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to tune in next year. That's not basketball, and that's not what you're thinking. Okay, if I get to see, you know, this is a few times, this is the only time where you get to see a LeBron versus a Kevin Durant, or you know, some of the matchups that you don't see. I mean, this is a collection of talent, and I think they're selling themselves short if you don't see guys go at each other. You know, it's funny that I don't know if you guys saw the meme of Kawhi Leonard sitting on the bench looking sad, you know, because Kawhi Leonard is known for playing defense, and he didn't understand why all of these guys were out here showboating and nobody was playing no defense. And subsequently, I don't think Kawhi Leonard played a lot during the All-Star game. I could be wrong. I have to go back and look at his minutes. But, you know, he's a guy known for defense, and he was just like, okay, I might as well just sit over here since you guys are clowning. Like, I'm not into that. So they're going to have to change some things. I mean, it's going to have to be more competitive, because – and I don't think you can afford to wait until the fourth quarter, because the game starts so late that you're talking about a game that's probably going off around 11 o'clock. And keep in mind, you've had all day to play this game. And, you know, I understand they moved it to TNT and they wanted it in prime time. I get it. But, you know, if you've had a chance to have the game, and keep in mind, there's no other game on that entire day. There's nothing to keep the All-Star game from being played at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, they want to have it on prime time and get the ratings and stuff. And that's going to eventually backfire, because people are not going to tune in, especially not knowing that they have to get up and go to work the next day. I mean, hell, the Super Bowl comes on at 6 o'clock. And it's over by 9:30, 10 o'clock. So, you know, people still have time to enjoy it. But, nah, really wasn't feeling the All-Star game. Subsequently, the slam dunk competition. I don't know what to say about the slam dunk. Any thoughts on the slam dunk competition?
You know, the dunk competition, man, is one of those events. Year in and year out, it's not going to be great. But every so often, every two, maybe 3 years, there is a great one. The last two were pretty spectacular. This one wasn't. And that's no slight to baby dog Glenn Robb or what's his first name? I know it ain't Glenn. Is it Glenn Robb?
Yeah. Glenn Robinson the third.
Baby dog. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know he had ups like that. So he definitely surprised me, shocked me. But he wasn't doing anything that was crazy. I think what surprised me was Aaron Gordon didn't have no bounce. That was kind of surprising.
He's hurt.
Derrick Jones Jr., if you guys YouTube him, oh my God. And some of the dunks he had were crazy. But, you know, it's just one of those things, man. Like, this was just an off year. You know, Zach LaVine in the last 2 years, he brought it back a little bit. But it's All-Star Weekend, man. I enjoy it because I'm a basketball fan. But for the casual fan that doesn't, you know, isn't into basketball like me, this isn't going to make them want to watch the rest of the season. It's not going to necessarily make them fans of certain players. You're 100% right. The competitiveness, what these guys are doing, regardless if it's the All-Star game, three-point contest, dunk contest, all of that stuff, man. It just, the level of competition just needs to be better. The dunk contest contestants, we need the big names. We need the star athletes. It needs star power. It needs to bring that type of drama, man. And I don't know how the league can't force guys to participate in the dunk contest, but they need to figure something out to get the big names to compete, man. Because that's really what it's missing.
I had fun. I thought it was cool, man. You know, I kind of had fun watching it and tripping out on Snapchat, you know, during the dunks, just kind of clowning around. But, you know, I think for me, when they started missing dunks, it took a lot of the air out of the room. Seeing Aaron Gordon not able to really compete the way we expected and wanted to see was disappointing. Because I thought that drone, like when he brought that drone out, I was like, oh, this is about to be crazy. And it nothing. I really wanted to see more from Derrick Jones Jr., but you know, he started missing and he couldn't execute the way he wanted to. I thought it was cool. But yeah, it wasn't anything compared to what we saw last year. And I think that's what people expected.
Yeah, I couldn't. I just couldn't.
I mean, we grew up. Look, think about it. Yeah, we grew up watching Dominique and Michael Jordan.
Right.
Sean Kemp, like we grew up watching like some of the best dunkers ever compete head to head. We're Vince going Carter. To be disappointed. Yes, Vince right. Carter. We're going to be
question.
Disappointed.
No question.
It's not.
I mean, that, but that's the thing, Ken. I'm tired of being disappointed, man. Because like I don't want to be the old guy get off my lawn type dude, man. But that's what it takes me back to. Like I reminisce about, you know, 88 back in 88 when Dominique won the dunk contest and it was stolen from him by Michael Jordan. Yeah, he won it. I said it. Hello?
Go ahead, B. Yeah, I was about to say, it's funny because I tweeted this, I think, Monday. Yesterday. I was saying that, you know, unfortunately, at this point, like you said, Ken, you know, we saw some, we witnessed some very, very creative dunks coming up. And I agree with FIFO too. Last year dunk contest was actually pretty was very impressive because Eric Gordon mm-hmm. and Zach LaVine was doing some crazy dunks. But just from the side of that, you know, how much more creative can they get? Because I said this at this point, I want to see someone take off from the 3-point line. Like, I mean, unless they just do something that we just never seen before, like. And I've been saying this for the last 5 years, and I tweeted this too. Just bring some street dudes in. Bring all the street mm-hmm. ballers in. Give them, hey, Give a hey, purse is you know, 500,000 to first place winner. You think them dudes ain't gonna do no crazy dunks to get that money? You know what I'm saying? These are guys that don't have NBA contracts. So, you know, $500,000 or even $1 million, it's some good change for them. You think these YouTube dunkers or whatever gonna do some crazy stuff? Yes, they will. Maybe for someone like us who probably stay on YouTube, we'd be like, oh, man, that's cool. They're doing it on the big stage. But to someone, like people said, a casual, someone who don't really stay up on YouTube and know about these type of street dunkers, they're going to be blown away because they do some crazy stuff on them YouTube. So I don't know, man. Think something. That's the only thing I can think of to kind of make the dunk contest interesting. But, you know, these players – there's only so much that they can do that we've seen already. You know, how many between the legs 360s are we gonna see? How many? You know, it's only so much that we're gonna see. So, like I said, unless the Greek Freak take off from the 3-point line, hey, I'm all for that. But yeah, it is. We gonna complain unless they do something that's gonna shock us next year. We're gonna complain again and say, "Up, it wasn't creative enough." It's just so many. Dunk contest been going on since 84 and in the 70s with Dr. J taking off from free throw line. So it's just like and we seen that dunk. So low key, we seen the free throw line dunk too. It's just like, how much more creative can you get throughout these years with these dunks, man? So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I said the same thing, man. And I was, you know, telling one of my boys that the other night as we were watching it, I was like, how likely are we to see something that we've never seen before? I mean, every now and then you do. And so that's what I think that's the intrigue. Like people said, the 2 or 3 years that make us come back, because prior to last year, I was done. I was like, yo, you know,
I mean, cut you off, but like,
no, go ahead.
Some of the dunks that I think it was either one or two of them that Eric Gordon did last year or Zach LaVine did last year. One of them was inspired by a YouTube dunk. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for someone that's a casual fan that don't really stay up on that, they was like, oh, man, did y'all see that? And I remember tweeting it last year, like, oh, man, I saw that on YouTube. Like, someone, like, that's cool that, you know, Eric Gordon and Zach LaVine brought that to the main NBA stage, because a typical person is not going to check that out. You know
exactly.
What I'm saying? So,
exactly.
Yeah, man, I think stuff like that is cool.
Yeah, it definitely helps. I think one of the things that definitely hurts the dunk contest is the mandate that you have to use props. I think if you use props, it should be based on whether or not you want to or not. I think now they're making them use them in each round or what have you. So it's, you know, and like Ken said, coming up in the era that we came up in, we saw all of the great dunk contests. And that's not to say that we can't see another great dunk contest, but when you only have four guys and two up, start missing dunks, it's anticlimactic. And, you know, at that point, it's like, all right, let me just turn the TV off. I mean, because it's just done. So unless they revamp it, I think we're going to get more of the same. And you, like FIFO said, I think you'll have, you know, one great year and then 4 years that suck. And it's just, you know, are you going to keep coming back? I think probably next year, I probably won't watch it next year, but yeah, we'll see, man. It wasn't, you know, shout out to Robinson III for winning, but you know, and I mean he did, you know, some incredible dunks, but you know they were the same dunks. I mean, he almost did like the same dunks like 2 or 3 times. So last topic I have on here, we did not do a show last week, but so like a week and a half ago, Draymond Green made some comments to media with regards to the interaction or beef or, you know, altercation that James Dolan, well, not the altercation, James Dolan for the New York Knicks, the owner, but the beef that he had with a former Knicks player, Charles Oakley. And, you know, it's been well chronicled that Charles Oakley was thrown out by 8 or 9 security guards in Madison Square Garden and was temporarily banned from the arena. It took a phone call from Commissioner Adam Silver, as well as Michael Jordan, who was one of Charles Oakley's best friends, to get the ban lifted. A conference call between those four men, as well as Oakley and James Dolan. Now, Oakley has gone on record saying that he is not going back to the Madison Square Garden anytime soon, even though he is no longer banned. But Draymond Green made some headlines when he said that he thought that James Dolan had, quote, a slave owner mentality. Speaking to a radio, he said that, it was on his podcast, A Dre Day, which I didn't know Draymond Green had a podcast, but since he does, we got to get him on our podcast. but nonetheless, Draymond Green said that he thought James Dolan had a slave owner mentality, meaning that, you know, the things that Oakley did for the Knicks while he was, you know, an employee for the Knicks was all fine and good, you know, as far as his hard work, dedication, intimidating people, those type of things. And then moving forward, now that he's being, and Oakley's been very critical about Dolan as well as the Knicks, that is no longer any good for them. So he used the term slave owner mentality. So, FIFO, I'll start with you, man. What did you think about Draymond's comments? Was he correct, or was he kind of out of pocket?
Draymond's gonna speak his mind, and I'm not gonna say that he's wrong. Mainly because a lot of these owners, the color is not the color of our skin on this show. Mm-hmm. And they've been entitled. And when you look at the fact that you technically own a player for X amount of time while they're under contract, a lot of these guys feel that they can do and say whatever they want. And whenever it's flipped on them, they have an issue with it. So I'm not going to say those words, what Draymond said, but I understand where he's coming from. And I don't think he's wrong for saying it at all. We saw the video after the fact. We didn't see as soon as Charles Oakley got there, but the rumor has it that he was only there 5 minutes before he was escorted out in the video that we saw. So how can he get so belligerent to James Dolan in that small amount of time to have him escorted? So look, man, I'm going to let Draymond have it. You know, whatever he said is whatever he said. I'm not disagreeing with it, but I'm not going to say those words. I know Ken got it. Kendall, break it down.
B, what about you, man? Your thoughts on Draymond Green and what he had to say about James Dolan?
Man, you know, it's really tough when you comparing something to slavery, because, man, slavery was freaking, man, slavery was awful. You know what I'm saying? Slavery was really bad. So for him to use the slavery comparison, you know, nothing compares to slavery. Nothing. Like, nothing at all. Yeah, I can see why he made those comments, because, you know, then James Dolan want to say, oh, well, let me bring Larry Johnson and Latrell Sprewell on there. And I think Jalen Rose made this point. You haven't invited Sprewell to Madison Square Garden in 13 years. Now, all of a sudden, you want to invite him now? You know what I'm saying? So I thought that was pretty interesting. But, yeah, you know, slavery, man. you can't be throwing that word around there, you know, very lightly like that. You know what I'm saying? Because nothing can, none of us never experienced it, thank God. I hope we never will, or it goes to the moment where we have to go back to it. But yeah, man, it's really tough. I get it though, because it's like, the you know, you got the owner, and you got all your white owner and all that stuff. You got your black players and all, you using your black butt, using your buddy guys to show, oh yeah, you know, James Dolan, a good guy. He brought his other past players there. You know, Charles Oakley, you know, oh, come on back. Then why would you ban him if he's welcome back to the damn? Yeah, man. I mean, I get it. But yeah, like people said, Draymond going to speak his mind. But slavery, can't just be going around comparing stuff to slavery easily like that.
Nah, you can't, man, and
can't.
That was just, I think you went a little too far with that one.
Yeah,
because you know, you got paid, bruh. Like, you got paid, and you can quit and go to another team and get paid there too. Slave master mentality is you can't go anywhere. You're going to go on this court. You're going to run up and down and do what I ask you to do, or you're going to get lashes on your back. No. Now, he may not have respect for black people, but even that's a reach. I can't even say that. I don't know, because the man is around. I don't know. I just think that he went a little too far with that one. And I think that for me, if Draymond needs to chill, yo. Draymond really need to get himself together, man. I mean, you're saying James Dolan has a slave master mentality. None of that came up at all. Like, nobody's even looking at that. We're talking about a 6'8" black man that jumped on a white man, a billionaire, by the way, and everybody was on the black man's side. Like, that's where we are with this story. James Dolan was the bad guy here, not Charles Oakley. In this day and age, if you really think about it, this was a easy moment for people to say, look, see how they act? See? Look at them. They have to drag them out. It took about 8 of them. You know, so, but it didn't happen. And to be honest, I was afraid of that when I saw it, but it didn't happen at all. And for once, I was like, you know what? All right, go ahead, America. But then this fool comes around, especially with the way he acting. Because the way he's showing out on the court, Draymond don't need to be saying anything and comparing anything to Slave Master, because the way you acting, I can see a lot of people saying, look, that's how they act. So you need to get yourself together, bruh, and control your attitude. Put some perm on your attitude before you start going out here and saying some crazy stuff like that, that really honestly don't apply in this situation like that. It's just too easy. And I think he's just wrong for that, man. I think the bigger thing that we need to look at is that we just need more black owners, and that can happen. And I think LeBron's going to make that at some point. Will be owner of an NBA team. Jay-Z has been part owner. I don't care what percentage, he's been part owner. Magic Johnson is getting to a point where I think he may be owner. All of this wealth you guys are accumulating right now, be an owner. And that's it. So Draymond, you go out, do what you need to do, and you buy your team. And that's it.
Hey man, you hit the nail on the head, Ken. I think it was a poor choice of words. I understand the premise from which he was trying to come, but I think it's problematic because, and Draymond actually kind of walked the comments back, but, you know, a couple of days later, you know, and he started off by saying, I don't know James Dolan personally. Well, you know, you can't, it's hard to really start throwing out racial overtones about people that you don't know. You know, that's why, and you know, it's because I think somebody asked him if he thought that James Dolan was a racist. And he was like, well, I don't know the man personally. And I was like, okay, well, if you don't know him personally, then, you know, the slave master comment probably was, you know, a little bit too far, I think, because, again, you don't know him personally. And, you know, if Charles Oakley had said it, cool. If, you know, Latrell Sprewell had said it, cool. You know, just like, and we go back to the Donald Sterling instance. You know, we heard the tapes and stuff of what Donald Sterling had to say, but then there were also people as well as players that could back up and confirm what they heard and thought, you know, and heard him say. So that added validity to the statement of, you know, whether or not Donald Sterling was racist, and ultimately ended up him losing his team. But Draymond, nah, bro, you're not even on this team. And like I said, if Oakley had said it, that'd be a different story. But I do understand the premise by which he came from, because I think what Draymond is asking for is the same thing what Charles Oakley is asking for, is the same thing what LeBron is asking for, and all the players in between. They want to be seen as businessmen and also be respected by these owners. That's all. I mean, they just want the respect. You know, I remember when Michael Jordan signed his, I think it was the last contract that he signed with the Bulls, his last year in Chicago, the owner famously made a statement saying, and Jordan signed a 1-year deal for like $33 million. The owner famously said, you know, I shouldn't sign this contract because you're not worth this. That's bullshit. Michael Jordan's worth way more. He was worth way more to the Bulls than $33 million. But it was like one of those situations where the owner was trying to keep Michael Jordan down. And all these guys want to be, they just want to be respected. And I think Oakley wants, now Oakley had his opinion. And, you know, if he's critical of or has been critical of the Knicks, I can understand why Dolan might have wanted him thrown out. But Dolan made a statement to the media that, or at least to his security team, that, like you said, if he was in there 5 minutes, they said that Oakley should not, that Dolan said that Oakley should not have made it to his seat. That means to me that it sounds like he's intimidated and fearful of Charles Oakley. Charles Oakley was just coming to the game, and he paid for Charles Oakley shouldn't have to pay for a ticket to see the Knicks. He should get in free. You know, but he came and he was sitting down and, you know, by himself. He wasn't bothering. Now, he wasn't sitting far from James Dolan, but he wasn't bothering him. And then, you know, they come and rough him up and throw him out. So, yeah, Draymond, you know, making that statement from the other side of the country about a team and an owner that he does not know. Nah, you can't do that. You just can't. And, you know, poor choice of words. But I think what he wants is the same thing that all of these players want. They want these owners. And we've seen this in these, you know, CBA negotiations and strikes and stuff like that. You know, these players, they want respect from these owners. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. They know that they're going to be paid and compensated heavily and paid well, you know, but they want the respect as men, as businessmen. And I don't, and at the end of the day, if they're playing for you, they don't feel like that's too much to ask for. And so Oakley, while he's entitled to his opinions about the Knicks, about Dolan, about the direction of the franchise, I mean, hell, he's one of the players that helped build, you know, what they have in Madison Square Garden. I think you got to show a little bit more respect to a guy like Charles Oakley. I just do. I mean, you can't. You know, that could have handled, that could have been handled a whole lot better than it should have been handled. So, but yeah, so that's going to do it for us. It is we are coming to the end of the podcast. Time for our closing thoughts. Ken, you want to give us your closing thoughts?
Oh, man. Wow. Sage Steele.
Oh, my God.
I'll be brief. You're black. There's nothing you can do to change it. It would help if you didn't constantly beat down black people. You have a black dad. You have black family. Black people do good stuff. We're not all bad and evil just because people call you names and stuff on Twitter. Poor Sage Steele. You know, and your kids. They're going to be black, and they're going to have to deal with, hopefully they won't have to, but it's possible they're going to have to deal with stuff. So, you know, while there are things to criticize about black people, there's things to criticize about white people and every single race, if you want to, but just be mindful of some of the things that you say. You have a voice and people listen to you, and it would be nice to hear you say something positive about black people every once in a while. I'll just leave it at that.
No doubt, no doubt. What about you, FIFO? Closing thought.
The NBA needs to make the All-Star game more meaningful. So that way we can get that competitive balance, man. Because as a fan, I love the NBA. If there's a basketball game on, I don't care who's playing. It could be the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, I watch the whole game, but I watch part of the game. And when you have the best collection of basketball talent in the world, you want to see those guys at least go somewhat at it. So I challenge the league to do something. Make that game more meaningful down the road in the season. I don't know. Maybe you get home court advantage. I don't know what you do, but you guys got to get creative to put a better league is always progressive. They're always forward thinking. I think that they'll figure it out, but they need to do something to make this game a little bit more meaningful. Because when you go back and you look at the greats that participated in this game, the way these greats are playing is slightly disrespectful to how they played the game. So, again, I just challenge the league to try to figure out this All-Star game situation.
No doubt. What about you, B?
I was talking to Ken about this earlier. I find it, we wasn't recording though, but I find it very funny that, you know, people always complain about Floyd Mayweather fights. Oh, he's so boring. Why every time when someone talks about fighting Floyd Mayweather, everyone wants to see it? The media hypes it up, and then the same media that hypes it up and be excited about watching the Floyd Mayweather fight is the same media that dogs him out every time after he wins, saying how boring of a fight Floyd Mayweather. Oh, I can't believe I wasted my money, or I can't believe us media wasting our time with Floyd Mayweather. And then, you know, a year and a half later, they begging Floyd Mayweather to fight somebody else. Oh, you know, we need this Floyd Mayweather fight to happen. Oh, he needs to fight Conor McGregor. The fact that people think that Conor McGregor has a chance is crazy to me in the boxing ring. Now, if it was in the octagon, of course, Conor McGregor would kill him. But in the boxing ring, this is what Floyd's been doing his whole freaking life. People really think they hyping up that Conor McGregor has a chance when this dude's sparring with guys that's nowhere near as skillful as Floyd Mayweather, and he's still getting hit. So, yeah, I just find it interesting that, you know, folks complain, whine and whine, but then once it's, you know, Floyd is really the true last superstar left in boxing. I mean, who else is attracting, you know, putting up the numbers that Floyd is putting up? Rather you call him born or not, the dude's putting up the numbers, man. It's crazy. So he's really the true last superstar in boxing, man. And no personality, no one is doing what Floyd Mayweather has done in boxing over the last 20 years. So that's all I gotta say, man. Y'all whine, y'all cry wolf and stuff, and then y'all want him to fight again. So make up y'all damn minds.
No doubt. My final thought, man, on this past Saturday, a Facebook page called the St. Louis Cardinals True Fans linked a story with an attention-grabbing headline. The headline read, quote, "Cardinals outfielder expresses discontent with President Trump." Within 2 minutes, there was over 100 comments, and the comments, you know, were very, very, you know, mean-spirited, aggressive, racial. Most of them told him, you know, keep your mind on baseball, quote, nobody cares, nobody knows what your political views are, quote, shut up and play. These were directed at the Cardinals' new outfielder, Dexter Fowler. Dexter Fowler, the Cardinals signed in the offseason for $82.5 million. Keep in mind, the only thing, and I'm going to read to you what Dexter Fowler said. He didn't criticize President Trump. What he said was, quote, "It's huge, especially anytime you're not able to see your family. It's unfortunate." Close quote. What he was talking about was his sister-in-law, who his wife, first of all, his wife is from Iran. His sister-in-law lives in Iran. And he said that, you know, with the potential of this travel ban, that he would not be able to see some of his family, the married side of his family that is in Iran. And so my question or my statement to, you know, these quote unquote baseball fans, these purists from the St. Louis Cardinals, from this website, And I read just some of the comments. I mean, like, everybody was telling him to shut up, you know, just play. What I want to know from these people are, you know, is this: how would you feel if that was your family? You know, never mind the fact that it's not, or that Dexter Fowler has a family. You know, do you care more about the player or do you care about the team? I don't think that these fans sometimes, and I understand, yeah, and we see it all the time. People get in comment sections and just feel like they can say whatever they want to say. Half of these people would not say that to Dexter Fowler if he was standing in front of them. The sad part about it is some of these folks are so racist that if Dexter Fowler was Dexter Jones, they wouldn't be within 10 feet of him. all I'm going to say is this. If you're okay with a guy like Tom Brady riding for the person in the White House, then surely you can be okay with an athlete who speaks out against the person in the White House, because we just endured 8 years of that. You can't have it both ways. Now, if you want to have a serious discussion, I think you probably want to get past the headlines, because I read to you what the quote that Dexter Fowler had to say. He didn't say anything, but he didn't even mention the president by name. And these people saw a headline and they ran with it. And St. Louis Cardinals calls themselves America's fans. Sounds like a bunch of racists to me. That's going to do it for us for this week. For Ken, for B, for FIFO, I'm your host, 12 Kyle. We'll catch you guys next week. Peace.